This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans. And its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The manager of last year's successful campaign to recall former Oregon City Mayor Dan Holliday has been appointed to fill a seat on the city commission that was made vacant by his ouster. The removal of Mayor Holliday by 68% of voters in November's recall election did not directly open a seat on the Oregon City Commission. But that did happen in the special election in March, when then City Commissioner Rachel Lyle Smith was elected to fill Holliday's unexpired term. In Wednesday's Oregon City Commission meeting, commissioners interviewed and reviewed applications by six hopefuls to replace Lyle Smith, ultimately settling on Adam Marl, a legislative intern for State Representative Jack Zika, Republican Redmond, a senior at Willamette University and former campaign manager for the committee to recall Dan Holliday. It's imperative that our policymaking process includes diverse perspectives who have a stake in our city's future, Merrill said in his application for the position. My track record of advocacy makes me suited to begin on day one. I'm not done fighting for my community, and I'm ready to do it on the other side of the dais. Morrow faced fierce competition for the job, including former City Commissioner Betty Mum, also the owner of Ultimate Team Spirit in Canby, Pamplin Media Group Operations Director Vance Tong, longtime community leader and civic organizer Bob LaSalle. The field also included businessman and author Leslie Wright Jr., who finished second to Lyle Smith in the special mayoral election, and former Oregon City School Board member and current Parks and Rec Chair Troy Bullinger. In a letter to the mayor and current commissioners, Morrow said he had been thinking about his role in local government following the campaign to remove Holliday, which made to collect 1,000 more signatures than were needed to trigger a recall election, despite the COVID-19 pandemic and September wildfires that sparked mass evacuations. He said he was initially reluctant to apply for the position, given his age and seeming lack of experience. As I reflected more, I realized I was selling myself short, he said. I am in the middle of working my third session at the Oregon State Legislature and have a strong grasp of the issues. I have pre-existing relationships with many of our regional elected officials from having been involved in local government since high school. My studies at Willamette University in policy and communications have given me the necessary skills to do the job effectively. I have demonstrated my commitment to bridging divides as a community organizer. Most importantly, he added, he is a product of Oregon City. Having grown up there after being adopted from South Korea at a young age, Oregon City is my home, he said. At 20, Merrill was easily the youngest candidate in the field. Indeed, he was the only hopeful not old enough to legally celebrate his appointment with a glass of bubbly. He may even be the youngest in the city's history, though the records needed to verify that are scarce. Anecdotally, I would assume he is, but we don't collect date of birth information from our candidates or commissioners, explained Oregon City Community Communications Coordinator Kristen Brown. Commissioners have to be at least 18, the legal voting age in Oregon, but we don't hold date of birth information. But in the end, Marl's youth actually appeared to have been a strong point in his favor. I'm thrilled, Lyle Smith said after a unanimous vote to install Merrill in her former post. I hope you're ready. You're going to have to jump in with 2 feet. It's a lot of work, but clearly there is a lot of confidence in your ability to step in and represent a component of our community that isn't currently represented, the youth, and I'm excited about having that different perspective. Merrill will indeed hit the ground running. His first commission meeting was the next day, immediately after being sworn in. He will serve in the position through December 2022. After hopes that a more spread out event could be held this summer in compliance with the state's coronavirus compliance, the 2021 Oregon Renaissance Fair has been canceled amid a continuing fourth surge of new COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations. The Ren Fair had been scheduled to take place in Canby across the first 2 weekends in June. It was the second straight year the popular historical themed event was canceled at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds due to the pandemic. It was also another troubling sign that, despite the continuing proliferation of COVID vaccines the county's top scientists have deemed safe and effective, a swift return to normalcy, including large events, is probably not in the cards this summer. It is with the heaviest of hearts that we announce the postponement of the Oregon Ren Fair this year due to heavy restrictions from the county due to COVID-19, the ORS said on its Facebook page May 1st. We are sorry and sad to have to cancel, but it's in the best interest of everyone's health. Last week, Clackamas and 14 other counties returned to extreme risk, the highest and most restrictive tier in the governor's reopening framework. The risk level carries severe restrictions for restaurants, bars, gyms, theaters, and other businesses, as well as both indoor and outdoor events. If the Ren Fair were to go on under the current risk restrictions, only 50 people would be able to attend, including vendors, crews, and volunteers. As we all know, this event, and ones like it, take months of planning and are not put together with a moment's notice, ORF organizers said in a separate statement. Clackamas County will be in the extreme risk category from April 3rd to May 6th, and there is no idea when this will move from extreme to moderate or even low. Those who bought tickets will be getting a refund, organizers said. For more information, please contact info@oregonfair.com. Organizers say they are already planning for a Renaissance-worthy return next summer. We will be back in full force for the 2022 season, organizers promise, and we will miss you all until then. The Canby Prayer Breakfast is still planning to return to an in-person event later this year, but it won't happen on the National Day of Prayer next month. The Canby event has traditionally coincided with the National Day of Prayer since its inception 17 years ago. This one was originally scheduled to return to an in-person gathering with caps on attendance on May 6th, but that has now changed based on Clackamas County's return to the extreme risk tier of the governor's reopening framework amidst a rising fourth wave of coronavirus infections and hospitalizations this month. Event organizers met Thursday morning and made the difficult decision to postpone until the fall, Canby Center Executive Director Ray Keene told the Canby Current. It is a bummer, but it doesn't keep us from praying, Keene said. We will still encourage people in Canby to pray for our community, our state, and our country at noon on the National Day of Prayer on May 6th. Keene cited last year's experience as a factor in organizers' decisions not to transition to a Zoom event for May 6th, but to instead postpone the in-person gathering in hopes the conditions improve. We just feel that the process of trying to coordinate prayer over a Zoom call is a challenge, Keene admitted. It can be awkward, and we're just as equipped to pray on our own. And we would really highly value the opportunity to come together as a community for prayer, so that's what we're going to be aiming for. Previously known as the Canby Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, the popular event is organized by the local faith community and centers around community members praying for Canby's leaders and first responders. Canby Mayor Brian Hodson and new city administrator Scott Archer were planned to give brief remarks at this year's event. The Aurora Fire District rescued one person trapped inside a recreational vehicle following a crash on Muteville Road near Boone's Ferry in Aurora Friday night. The RV left the roadside and collided with a tree in a single vehicle crash, which occurred around 10 p.m. Friday. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue assisted in the rescue at Aurora Fire's request. With the great teamwork between the agencies, they were able to remove the patient from the wreckage, the Aurora Fire District reported on its Facebook page. The patient was transported to a local area hospital for further treatment. We want to thank TVF&R for their assistance and help with successfully handling this difficult situation. A gallery featuring local and regional artists in a wide variety of mediums is coming to downtown Canby. Owners Eric and Shelley Arndt tell Now Hear This Canby, the combination art gallery and creative space will take up residence at the Graham Building on the corner of North Grant Street and Northwest 2nd Avenue, in a suite recently vacated by the Book Nook. The Arndts say the gallery will feature predominantly local and regional artists, along with some up-and-coming national artists for good measure. Featured mediums will include painting, photography, glass, metal, wood, ceramic, digital, mixed media, and so much more. And the gallery's name? Art-O-Matic. Everything in the gallery is unique, original, handmade, and amazing quality at prices everyone can connect to, the Arndts said on the new Art-O-Matic Facebook page. This is a gallery for the people, and we want to help you develop your artistry, whether you've been practicing for 20 years or never touched a paintbrush, regardless of age. The gallery is planned to offer classes, demonstration, and hands-on learning, while also hosting office parties, private events, team building exercises, and more. This is a place for everyone to discover and grow their artistry in a fun and safe learning space, the Arndts said. We will look forward to serving the artistic needs of everyone in the great city of Canby, surrounding areas, and those just passing through. The Arndts tell Now Hear This Canby they will be opening the new gallery this summer, hopefully by June.
Hey Tyler, I was reading an article the other day and I saw that 53% of Americans say they value technology even more since the COVID outbreak.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that article in Obvious News Weekly.
Okay, you don't have to be mean.
Seriously though, it is true. I know that I can't function anymore without all of my connected devices. And I heard that DirectLink saw a huge spike in internet traffic after the stay-at-home order began last year.
Yeah, it's a good thing DirectLink works hard to provide constant, reliable broadband service even during tough weather, peak use hours, and that big jump in increased demand.
Right, and we need access to a quality connection more than ever. We're working from home, the kids are still distance learning, and I've even had a few online doctor's appointments.
Yeah, not only that, but so many of our entertainment options have gone virtual. They're streaming TV shows and movies, Zoom game nights, and online gaming, so people really need reliable internet.
Wait. With all of that extra online activity going on, don't we have to worry about usage limits and high bills from using too much data?
Come on, Tyler. How many times have we been over this? DirectLink doesn't have data caps and doesn't charge extra fees for high usage. It says so right there on their website. Visit directlink.coop today to learn more. On the Canby Conversation today, we'll be talking about election season, which is upon us once again. The neighboring Aurora Fire District is led by a 5-member board, 3 seats on which will be open in the May 18th special district election. Current incumbents Bobby Meyer and Mark Anderson are running unopposed for their seats in position 3 and 5. Only position 4 is a contested race between current incumbent Don Deppner and Deb Barnes, both of whom join us now. Hi, ladies. Welcome.
Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us today. Don, we're hoping to start with you. Please tell us a hard question. Please tell us a little about yourself, including your past service on the Aurora Fire Board and other government or civic boards.
Great. I am currently on the Aurora Fire Board, and I was on the Canby Fire Board for 7 years. For the last 2 years, I have been on the Canby School Board, and I live in Aurora. So I'll tell you that a little bit about myself is I am married with almost six kids right now because we're just adopting another little one. We have been in the Canby Aurora area for the last 25 years. I absolutely love my community, and I feel like it's one of the most important things to do is to run. I want to tell you that when I was on Canby Fire Board, it was in the red by about $1 million when I got on the board. But when I left 7 years later, we were balanced and not having to take out a loan to operate the first 6 months of the year like we had been doing prior.
Wow.
Yeah. And Canby Fire District actually lowered our ISO insurance ratings. And this is really important because what it does is it saves thousands of dollars for residents within Canby. So I also was a part of adopting a strategic plan for Canby Fire District, was actually part of the process of hiring the fire chief there. And we really had a great management team that works for the citizens while I was part of the Canby Fire Board. The ambulance and transportation at Canby Fire is the highest patient care. Currently, Aurora Fire doesn't have EMS, and I really had some really poor experiences with the emergency service that I've needed for my family. Unfortunately, three times in the last year when calling an ambulance. And so these are the things that are so important to me that I feel like I really need to be a part of my community and not just look out for my family, but everybody else's in doing my role. So I just want to say that I really enjoy serving in the capacity that I do, and was really happy to go over to the Aurora Fire Board when they needed help on two different occasions now, and stepped up to be a appointed board member. So I just want to continue that through the election and continue to do what I can to help Aurora Fire.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Dawn, and congratulations on the new addition to the family.
Thank you.
All right, Deb, I would love to hear from you. Same question. Tell us a little bit about yourself, including past service on other government or civic boards that you've served on, and just any other relevant experience that you'd like to share.
Well, mine's not going to be as detailed as Dawn. I have lived in the Aurora community for about 45 years. I've been married for 47. I have two grown sons, and they have their own families and their own homes. My four grandkids are ages 26 to 17. I'm currently retired, but before retirement, I worked in radiation oncology cancer care for about 35 years. I enjoy working around the house and growing the garden. I haven't served on the board, but I have attended numerous board meetings in the past and try to be available if there's anything that I can assist the district with. And the most recent thing I did was I helped promote the ballot measure that passed in May of 2019. And by getting that ballot measure passed, this gave the Aurora Fire District the ability to add three full-time firefighters, which gave them one paramedic and two EMTs. They haven't needed my assistance for anything else, but I don't know if you recall when they had their utility trailer stolen a couple years back. Well, my husband and I donated a dump trailer to help them replace it, and that's pretty much my extent with Aurora Fire. In the community, I also work with the PAM group at the Aurora Airport, and that's the Positive Aurora Management Group. Mm-hmm. They help with noise issues and the different things that are going on at the airport right now as far as their expansion involvement, the master plan, and you know, some of those things. And prior governmental experience, when I was working, I was appointed to the 7-member board of radiologic technology by two different governors, and this will show by age. One was Neil Goldschmidt, and the other one was Barbara Roberts. So that's pretty much about me. You know, I wasn't expecting to have this opportunity to chat with you. I didn't know it was going to come up. So I made an effort to submit a lot of the details about my background and one thing or another that people can read in my candidate statement and the voters pamphlet, along with a list of individuals that have personally endorsed me for the position. And if you look in the Clackamas County voters pamphlet, I'm on page 66. And in the Marion County, I'm on page 38. And that will give you a little more detail of what my background has been. according to what they printed out for me.
Great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
This next question, I'm really interested to hear. You know, obviously, the fire board, like many of the boards and districts that voters will see on their ballot this May, is does very important work. But it's one of those things that you know, maybe might be a little under the radar for some folks and may not necessarily understand what the job of the fire board is. So I'd love to just ask you both what you see as the role of the Aurora Fire Board, and what is your interest in running and in serving your community in this way. Dawn, you've already kind of touched on that in your first answer, but maybe elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah. I think first and foremost, it's important to understand that we're the policymaker. We're representing the citizens of Aurora. The fire chief follows directions for his expenditures from the fire board. Right now, I am currently a financial advisor and have been for 22 years. So I am very familiar with reading budgets and understanding in depth what ways that we can perhaps save money. And I'll touch base on that a little bit more here in a minute. But and it's also important that we help to prepare for the future growth of Aurora Fire District. And it's important that we do that with having firefighters without costing the citizens a lot of money in taxes. And I believe that there are ways to do that and have better EMS services, things that will really in the short term and hopefully long term help with the care and the needs of our community. And again, prepare for the growth for Aurora Fire District. We're in an area right now that is it's expanding and contracting and growing, and mm-hmm. Especially with, you know, even the airport. So yeah, I guess that's it. Just really making sure that we're setting policy and helping for the growth and the future of Aurora Fire.
Absolutely. Thank you. Deb, same question. What do you see as the role of the fire board, and what is your interest in running and in serving your community in this way?
I agree with everything that Dawn said, but I'll kind of add to, you know, her comments as well. As citizens in the area, we need to know that when we dial 911 for an emergency, qualified help is going to arrive fast. And our community relies on AFD, and they have 8 paid firefighters on staff and an average of 25 volunteers that serve the needs of everybody's calls 24/7. I see one of the board's roles as supporting that need, both for the district firefighters and the district citizens, and that includes visitors that come to our area. I want Aurora Fire to continue to be strong and thrive as we go into the future. Like Dawn mentioned, the growth in this area is phenomenal. You see that in Canby, we see it in Aurora, and Donald's experiencing the same thing. So that's what I have to add to that question.
Absolutely. One thing that's so interesting about Aurora Fire District is obviously it serves the citizens who live here in terms of fire and emergency services, but has one of the busiest stretches of I-5 and the collisions and issues that can arise there. Many times, not, you know, involving folks that don't necessarily live within the district. So that's sort of something that you may not think about when you're initially thinking about, but the Aurora Fire District certainly has to think about that. This may play into our next question. So what are some of the, back to you, Dawn, what are some of the biggest challenges currently facing the district? Obviously, we could probably talk about this a lot longer than we're going to. So let's try to keep it to maybe your top three. And if reelected, what would your priorities be in addressing these challenges?
Thank you, Tyler. I think growth is a big one that we need to prepare the future need of Aurora Fire through a strategic plan or a master plan. Right now, we're looking at doing a master plan, and a cost for that is $48,000. A strategic plan would be about $18,000. And it's really, what those do is they're a working document to really show what the goals are moving forward, long-term goals for our district. The other thing I guess I want to really bring up that's, I feel so challenging is, I feel like we really need to bring Aurora Fire District into more of the EMS service. We need to hire paramedics. And I do believe that we need to contract with neighboring districts to manage the EMS. for Aurora Fire. And the reason is very simple. I had to call 911 because my daughter couldn't get off the floor. And when the paramedics showed up, unfortunately, Aurora is, they can't do the emergency medical. So all they could do was come into my house, take down what's happening with her. And then we have to wait for an ambulance from TBFNR or American Medical. Actually, it's AMR. I'm sorry. So yeah. Having to wait for the two of them. And so then when they finally got there, this is how it works. Like we, because of COVID, like we had to have Aurora Fire go out and tell them what was going on. And then they wouldn't come in. And then they actually said they wouldn't even transport my daughter. So all that Aurora Fire District could do was actually put her in a car. And I didn't even know how I was going to get her out. So they put her in my car and she's just so sick. Like she's uncontrollably sick. And in the midst of all that, we had to sign a paperwork saying that we refused ambulance service, and we didn't. And so these things that are happening, I just don't feel like our community really realizes how important it is to have that emergency medical service. Just to be really forward and blunt with you, like I live down on Eilers Road, and when I have to wait for an ambulance, it takes quite a while, and longer than I want to wait. And not only that, but when I do get an ambulance, they have to come in, assess the problem, and then I have to wait for AMR or TBFNR. And I just don't feel like that's right. I feel like when I was on the Ambifier, like we're able to call 911. They come, they're medical, they will give them medications, take care of them. I mean, I want that kind of service for our citizens in Canby or in Aurora. It is so important. The fire chief currently doesn't feel that the Aurora Fire Department should do EMS. He doesn't want to get into that kind of business, but I honestly don't think that we should be just firefighters. I think that when we're responding to calls, whether it be on I-5 or Elan Road, that we have the capabilities of taking care of them, just like Woodburn would, just like Canby would. Our neighboring districts are able to do it. And I really hope that we get in a spot where Aurora Fire can do that. Also, the last thing that's so important to me is we're considering a bond issue right now, and we're throwing around numbers. The last one I heard was $9 million, and that would be close to $1 per 1,000. And for me, for my property, that would mean a lot of additional income that I would have to come up with to pay taxes. And I think it's also important that we, if we looked at the recent SDA study that was done, that's the special districts, it shows that it would be really justifiable for us to look at having aid and help from Canby and Woodburn. And they've met to do those things. And so I really want to help facilitate in a really positive way how that could potentially help our citizens of Aurora. It's just so important to me. And I think that about sums it up, but that's probably three, Tyler.
Yeah, no, that was great, Dawn. And obviously I appreciate you so much sharing kind of your personal, some of the experiences from your personal life. I know that can be really scary whenever there's an emergency call in your own home and in your own family. And that is also obviously deeply personal. Thank you for being willing to share that, because it is obviously so relevant to what we're talking about as well.
We're going to take a quick break, then we'll be back with more information from our interview with the two candidates.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. the first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Deb, obviously going to ask you the same question in terms of what you feel are some of the biggest challenges currently facing the district and what would your priorities be in addressing if elected to this position?
You know, I'm not a current board member, so I'm not exactly in the know of what all the big challenges are. When I go to the board meetings, they'll discuss things and then they refer to everything's in your board packet. Well, not being a board member, I don't have the specifics of what's in the board packet. But I agree with Don that, you know, growth and the expenses that come with growth, you know, are going to be a concern ongoing. The population of the Aurora Fire District has, you know, more than doubled since I moved here in 1976. An example, in 2014, AFD responded to about 700 calls, and last year it was about 1,100. You know, the thing people think about, they think of fire, they go to fires. But if you look on their website and go to the statistics page, you will see that, you know, in 2018, of the 1,003 calls, only 85 of those were fire. A lot of them are medical and the motor vehicle ones. So that's something that is an issue. Budgeting for a fire district with a fixed amount of dollars, you know, is a real balancing act. The cost of equipment, supplies, and wages all continue to increase as time goes on. You know, we all experience when we go to purchase something. So this is an important thing that the district and board needs to continue to be fiscally responsible with the taxpayers' dollars. I appreciate that Chief Williams puts the effort into searching constantly for grant money that he can apply for so that he can stretch the tax dollars that are in the budget. And, you know, like I mentioned, there's 25 volunteer firefighters. Each of and every one of them play an important integral part of that AFD staffing puzzle. You know, I don't see how the paid 8 firefighters could do the same level of service if they didn't have these volunteers to help them out. So, you know, I hope those volunteers know how much we value and appreciate their service to the community. I listened to Dawn talk about her experience. Unfortunately, she had 3 calls and she gave us details on one. Well, I had 1 call this last year. My husband's a diabetic and he was going into a diabetic coma. I called 911 and because I couldn't get him out of it. I tried the sugars, I tried the injections, and I tried, you know, all the things as a caregiver that I could, and it wasn't working. He just kept going deeper and deeper into his little, you know, trance. And I mean, they were here fast. They came in with their med kits, they started IVs. They did blood sugars. They did everything that I would expect an EMS, as she calls them, to do. The ambulance people came in. Now, again, this is all during COVID. We're all wearing our masks. Fortunately, I had them in a large room so we could social distance as best we could. But my experience with Aurora Fire was 180 from what she experienced. So I am grateful for that. And the ambulance came. They waited until the 2 Aurora firefighters could get him stabilized to get him on the stretcher to move him on up to Meridian Park for a hospitalization. So not everybody's experience is different. You know, I'm just fortunate that mine went as well as it did. I would be just as devastated as Don was if I'd experienced something like that. Well, you know, your loved one is, you know, you know, almost checking out on you. So, you know, it's a hard thing. And, you know, I want to touch on the station. I know the station's needs are there, and that's going to be a big challenge the district faces coming up. You know, the two stations that we currently are using were built in the 1950s. You know, they were in the 1950s, the fire stations were manned only by volunteers. They didn't have people living there. The stations were basically built to park the truck and store the gear for the firefighters, that the volunteers that would show up. The two stations that they're living in are not designed to house firefighters because they don't have bedrooms and they don't have the shower facilities. You know, AFD's making both of these stations work, but they've outgrown these facilities. And as the community continues to grow and expand, they're going to need a new station in the future. I don't think it needs to be anything fancy. It just needs to be one that will incorporate current standards and up-to-date technology so it can house the firefighters that are on duty 24/7. And, you know, I agree with Dawn. Something's going to have to be done, and we're going to have to make it economical for the citizens to be able to afford come tax time. So that's all I have to add to that.
Well, thank you for that, Deb. Thank you as well for sharing some of your experience. I mean, that is why we're doing this, right? That's why it is so important to have citizens in these positions and have citizens be involved, even if not necessarily as a member of the board, but as you've kind of been, Deb, and attending meetings and sharing experiences when appropriate. You know, we all have a role to play as far as that goes, because all our needs are different, our experiences can be different, and all of that needs to be taken into account in terms of trying to, you know, guide our tax dollars and have the best district that we can. Last question here, back to you, Dawn. We just give you a chance to kind of give your final thoughts on why you think voters should choose you in this election. The ballots are on their way now, so folks might be kind of contemplating this decision as they're listening to this. And is there anything else that you'd like to share with the community, kind of wrapping up, any other thoughts you might have from today's discussion? Maybe if you would just tack onto the end of that as well, if there's a way to listeners or voters could follow up with you, your email address or Facebook page, something like that, and just ways that they can get in touch if they have other questions that we didn't talk about or want to follow up on things that we have talked about today.
Thank you, Tyler. I just think it's really important that when we're talking about EMS services, and I think I heard Deb touch on this a little bit, is it's very different in my experience that when you have somebody come in, they have to, you know, they have to come in and do the best that they can, but then they have to wait for an ambulance to do the transporting, and things get lost in the shuffle as far as the communication goes. And that's, I think, was the hardest part for me. And so, yeah. Also, I just think it's important for folks to understand that because I'm a financial advisor and really understand the finances for a fire district. When we had a conversation earlier this year about $9 million for a bond, which nothing is set in stone, of course, yet. I reflect on what Canby just recently did, and that was $4 million, and that was for two stations, adding a station on one side of town and updating another station. So $9 million just seems like way too much. So we need to make sure that we have somebody that's very fiscally responsible in those positions. I also think it's time to bring Aurora Fire District Emergency Service into delivering the highest level of emergency medical care. Over 75% of emergency calls are related to medical emergencies, so including injury accidents. I just feel like citizens are extremely long. The citizens are waiting extremely long for EMS transportations and paramedics care. I think that the Aurora Fire District policymakers need to set policy as recommended by administration, and we need to consider the recommendations already made by the Special Districts Association of Oregon, their study, and explore opportunities to build the efficiencies that we see. And I just want to end this conversation with saying how proud I am to honestly know Deb and her her involvement with Aurora Fire. I don't see that very often, where citizens come to these meetings and are really, really try to be informed. And I'd also just like to say, Deb, that I really wish that I would have had the opportunity to serve with you on the board. And I will always admire you for all that you've done for our community. In the ways that you can get a hold of me, you can just email me right now at my Aurora Fireboard email address. So with that being said, thank you very much. And I hope to have your vote.
Thank you, Dawn. Really appreciate that. Deb, we'll end with you. Why do you think voters should choose you in this election? And is there anything else you'd like to share with the community, either just in general or in terms of today's discussion? Any final thoughts?
Well, I don't have all the background experience that Dawn does. I know that I am a person that can fulfill the duties of a board member for Aurora Fire. I'm dedicated to activities I sign up for or that I'm assigned to. If elected, I'll do the best of my ability to get things accomplished for the citizens. It's important to me that the firefighters in the district have support, and if a board member, I would give them support. I also will keep my focus on what is best for the community while being fiscally minded about that. As I mentioned earlier, if the voters look at the voters pamphlet, it'll outline all of the background details that they have in there. And when they look at the voters pamphlet, they'll see a list of individuals that have personally endorsed me. And in that list of those individuals, they will see three current and one former Aurora Fire District Board Director on the list. I feel I'm a good person, maybe even the best person, who knows, for the position. And I ask for your vote in this election to become a director on the Aurora Fire Board in position number 4. Thank you. And as far as getting in touch with me, I have a Facebook page. And if people are on Facebook in Canby now and in Donald and then in Aurora, they will be familiar with some of the posts that I've been posting regarding the election and different things that I have to say about running for the position.
Awesome. Thank you. That was going to be my follow-up there. You beat me to it as far as ways people could contact you. Thank you, Deb. Thank you both so much for joining us today. It's been a delight to hear from you both, to hear your desire to serve. And we really appreciate it, you know, win, lose, or draw, both of your willingness to sacrifice your time and your resources to serve your community. That's so wonderful and really, really appreciate it. And I also just appreciate the spirit in which you did this interview today, the kindness and deference that you treated each other with. And that's so great to see it. And that's honestly why we wanted to do it in this format, to kind of have it a little bit of a conversation, because there is, you know, so much more, I think, in so many ways it does tie us together when we live in a community, even if we do have differences over policy or politics. I feel like we can and always should try to talk and listen to each other. And I so appreciate you guys being willing to do that today. And thank you all for listening. Please vote in this election. Ballots, like we said, should be on their way to your mailboxes now, or perhaps you already have them by the time you're listening to this. The last day to safely mail your ballot back is May 11th. If you miss that, or if you just prefer, you can also drop your ballot off in one of the secure drop boxes throughout the county. There are two in Canby, one at the Canby Civic Center, and one in Arneson Gardens, which is behind Fred Meyer. If those aren't convenient for you, you can look online at clackamas.us/elections to find all the different, there's actually a map of all the different drop sites. Thank you again, Dawn and Deb, for joining us today.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hares' expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.